Good morning. This is the KBOO Morning News for Thursday, May 1st, 2006. I'm Chris Andre. Coming up, the Oregon-based tire empire Les Schwab is being sued for discrimination against female employees. Free meat indeed. Today's the official start of the 2006 hurricane season. OPEC's meeting in Caracas, Venezuela today. And Iran has dismissed the U.S. offer of talks as propaganda. Portland area weather today, mostly cloudy this morning, showers developing in the afternoon, highs in the mid-60s. Tonight, rain turning to showers, temperatures in the 50s. A bicyclist has been killed after she was struck by a loaded log truck west of Cottage Grove, Oregon. Authorities identified the victim as 47-year-old Jane Higgin of Eugene. The accident happened yesterday afternoon. A group of four bicyclists were riding along Territorial Road near Ham Road when one of the cyclists crashed. Higdon moved into the southbound lane to avoid the other cyclists. At the same time, a southbound truck loaded with logs was approaching. The log truck driver moved towards the northbound lane in an attempt to avoid Higdon, but the right side of the truck struck her. After impact, the logging truck driver stopped. The highway was closed for nearly 4 hours for the investigation. Higdon was pronounced dead at the scene. Two former Washington South Sound Les Schwab employees have filed a class action lawsuit against the tire company. They are saying the company denied them promotions, training, and other employment opportunities because they are women. The suit was filed yesterday in U.S. District Court in Seattle. Plaintiffs Magdalene Morris of Tacoma and Jennifer Strange of Eatonville worked in the office and clerical side of the retail stores. Morris worked at Les Schwab stores in Tacoma, SeaTac, Bellevue, as well as the company's headquarters in Prineville. Strange worked in Puyallup. In the lawsuit, the women say they were denied advancement in the company because of their gender, even though they were willing to change store locations to move into management. The lawsuit also claims the company has a practice of discrimination, saying that Les Schwab has never hired a female manager for its retail stores, and that the company systematically excludes women from working on the sales and service side of the stores, experience required for getting a management position. This from the News Tribune. Jurors yesterday convicted one of the former executives from Enron's defunct broadband unit. Former broadband unit finance chief Kevin Howard was convicted of 5 counts of fraud, conspiracy, and falsifying records, while former in-house accountant Michael Krautz was acquitted of the same charges after a month-long trial. The verdict came 6 days after another jury convicted Enron founder Ken Lay and former Enron chief executive Jeffrey Skilling of fraud, conspiracy, and other charges in one of the biggest business scandals in U.S. history. Lay and Skilling were convicted of conspiring to run a massive fraud through repeated lies to investors and employees about Enron's financial strength. The company careened into bankruptcy proceedings in December of 2001. Howard and Krautz were the first of 5 broadband executives to be retired in separate cases after the original trial of the entire group ended in a hung jury last year. Although Enron was primarily an energy trader, the broadband unit was created to sell movies over the internet in a diversification move. Think about the Pacific Ocean rising to the level of, say, 14th Avenue in downtown Portland, Tillamook underwater, nearly 100,000 Oregonians forced from their homes by water. That scenario is one possible consequence of global warming. A new analysis by Oregon researchers suggests it makes sense for the state to spend a little bit now to help avoid even a small risk of such trauma many years from now. The report says, if a market existed for global warming insurance, the private sector in Oregon would be willing to pay on the order of $500,000 to $3 billion to avoid the risk of catastrophe. Steps under review in Oregon include requirements for more efficient cars and a greater share of energy coming from renewable sources. Their price now may be small compared to the payoff in terms of avoiding catastrophe later on. Other scientists have calculated a less than 10% risk that climate change will unravel the national economy to the same extent as the Great Depression. They used rules of thumb that govern insurance policies to estimate that Americans would be willing to pay between $45 billion and $250 billion to avoid the risk of such economic damage. This from the Oregonian. Some Oregon Department of Transportation workers are on the verge of losing in their effort to sever ties with the state's largest employee union and form their own union. A ruling is pending before the State Employment Relations Board, which oversees the state collective bargaining law for public employees. June 9th is the filing deadline for objections. The workers have sought to break with Service Employees International Union, which represents about 2,700 employees in ODOT. They want to set up an independent Oregon Workers Union for about 1,900 ODOT employees, mostly in highway division offices and shops, who are now represented by SEIU Local 730. SEIU Local 503 is the parent organization that represents more than 18,000 state employees overall. It filed objections last year that triggered a hearing by an administrative law judge. ODOT also filed objections but withdrew them before the hearing. Steve Burton, the new treasurer of SEIU Local 730, said new officers elected this month are committed to making peace. Burton works in ODOT's materials laboratory in Salem. He and others said they hope that a ruling will enable them to put the controversy behind them. Gathered again yesterday at the Port of Olympia to demonstrate against a 950-foot military cargo ship bound for Iraq. Activists began protesting at the port more than a week ago after learning that the striker vehicles and other army gear from the 3rd Brigade, 2nd Infantry Division were being shipped to Iraq. The USNS Pomeroy, the largest ship ever to dock in Olympia, arrived Monday night and it is leaving today. Dan Kimball, Thurston County Sheriff's Chief Criminal Deputy, said no one was seriously injured in the demonstration on Tuesday night. 20 people were arrested for trespassing after they tore down a gate at the port entrance and lay down. Two others were arrested for failing to disperse and grabbing officers. Authorities used pepper spray several times, including once when some in the crowd started hurling bottles and rocks at the approximately 70 law enforcement officers on the scene. Later yesterday, port officials cleared the signs out of the plaza and pressure washed chalk messages that were written by the protesters who moved outside of yellow tape that was set up outside the plaza. The Los Angeles Times yesterday assessed the situation in Iraq and found that hopes for an Iraq pullout are fading. The newspaper reports that British Prime Minister Tony Blair and President George Bush postponed a planned announcement of troop reductions in Iraq. The report is the first to confirm a raw story report of May 22nd, which said that Bush and Blair were expected to announce a, quote, phased withdrawal plan, which would cut U.S. forces in Iraq by 30,000 and nearly half British troops. The L.A. Times reports that resurgent violence in Iraq has dimmed the the prospect of significant troop reductions. The Pentagon's hopes of making substantial reductions in U.S. troop levels in Iraq this year appear to be fading as a result of the violence. The U.S. announced on Tuesday that it would move 1,500 backup troops from Kuwait to Al Anbar in western Iraq. Now it seems that reductions are unlikely unless U.S. and Iraqi forces are able to ameliorate sectarian tension. A Pentagon report on Tuesday painted a grim picture of the conflict. The top editor of the Syracuse New Times, which saw its profile of President Bush's new chief domestic advisor altered and reposted on his website. The newspaper calls the incident insulting and said, the editor calls the incident insulting and said she plans to consult a lawyer about possible legal action. Molly English, who served as editor-in-chief of the Alternative Weekly for 5 years, told editor and publisher, "What is getting lost here is that the White House changed quotes, and that's getting. And today, I find it insulting, and I find that the excuses are awfully lame." English's comments came a day after the newly appointed domestic policy advisor, Carl Zinsmeister, acknowledged taking the 2004 New Times profile of him and changing both quotes and text. He then reposted it on the website of the American Enterprise Institute's magazine, still under the New Times author's byline. The article by New Times staffer Justin Park had been written because Zinsmeister lived in the Syracuse area. After the New York Sun revealed that Zinsmeister had posted the altered copy and the Washington Post quoted Zinsmeister as admitting the change, the issue arose at a White House press briefing on Tuesday, where Press Secretary Tony Snow was forced to defend the White House actions. A civil rights lawyer yesterday demanded authorities investigate a roundup of hundreds of undocumented immigrants in what he called a desert dragnet based on racial profiling. In a letter to the Department of Homeland Security, attorney Luis Carrillo claimed U.S. Border Patrol agents only pulled over people with brown skin in the 5-day operation known as Operation Desert Denial. More than 600 undocumented immigrants were detained from May 19th to May 24th along Interstate 40 near Barstow. Carrillo said no light-skinned people were detained. Carrillo also criticized authorities for focusing efforts far from the border. He said he did not plan to file a lawsuit against the Border Patrol. Tamara Faulkner, spokeswoman for the Inspector General of the Department of Homeland Security, said she was not aware of Carrillo's demand for an investigation and declined to comment. Carl McLafferty, chief patrol agent of the Border Patrol division that handled the operation, said in a written statement that authorities were targeting a human smuggling route for immigrants who'd crossed into Arizona and Texas from Mexico. The statement said officers only pulled over vehicles that looked suspicious, but it did not reveal what criteria was used to make that determination. In the first public testimony by a member of Jack Abramoff's inner circle, a former congressional aide told a federal jury yesterday how the disgraced lobbyist identified his, quote, champions in government and then showered them with favors to get inside information and help for his clients. Neil Bowles, who was chief of staff to Representative Robert Ney before joining Abramoff's lobbying firm, testified that among those he and his colleagues considered allies were Ney and former General Services Administration official David Safavian. Central to Team Abramoff's lobbying operation, Bolt said was developing contacts in government who operate at a higher level and who, for whatever reason, want to help you out. Vols testified that Safavian and Ney guided the lobbyists as they looked for ways to gain access to government-owned land in Maryland, which Abramoff wanted for a religious school. In the weeks before, the lobbyists took the two officials on a luxury golf trip to Scotland. This from Raw Story. U.S. computer company Sun Microsystems is to cut up to 5,000 jobs in an attempt to turn around 5 years of losses, according to the BBC. The firm aims to eliminate the jobs over the next 6 months, which it said would yield annual cost savings of up to $590 million. But the restructuring plan is expected to cost Sun up to $500 million over the next few financial quarters. The firm wants to regain market share from rivals Dell and Hewlett-Packard. According to the BBC, the latest set of minutes from U.S. Federal Reserve policymakers have left markets with no clear idea as to the central bank's interest rate strategy. U.S. markets have seesawed in recent weeks due to interest rate uncertainty. According to the FOMC minutes, members were uncertain about the risks from inflation, and they worried about the inflation pressures created by surging energy and commodity prices. But they're also concerned about a potential slowing in the speed of U.S. economic growth as previous interest rates rises and the cooling housing market took effect. The minutes left some market watchers unimpressed. Some analysts said that the minutes were mildly hawkish, showing that despite the obvious uncertainty, Federal Reserve policymakers were still worried about inflation and were willing to raise interest rates in order to contain it. And this from the BBC. And we now have a story from the Oregon News Service on a Mercy Corps efforts in assisting with the relief to earthquake victims in Java, Indonesia.
Oregonians are quickly stepping up to help the 150,000 people left homeless after this weekend's earthquake on the Indonesian island of Java. The Oregon-based humanitarian aid group Mercy Corps already has a team on the ground distributing emergency kits to survivors. Spokesman Jerry Barnacle says they're hurrying to help with immediate needs.
One of the really acute needs right now is for temporary shelter. We're sending out survival kits, which includes a tarp, some blankets, and some hygiene products for families before we can find more permanent housing for them.
Barnacle says they will expand their response to help clean up and rebuild as soon as the immediate survival needs are met. Over 5,000 people were killed in the quake, and the toll is expected to rise. Barnacle also says they are looking at what it will take to get the communities back on their feet.
How do you get kids back in school? How do you get people moving back into homes? How do you get markets functioning again? And even as we're giving direct relief, we're looking at the longer-term needs.
Mercy Corps, with its global headquarters in Portland, employs more than 2,500 people worldwide who help nearly 10 million people in more than 40 countries. Content was provided by the Oregon News Service. I'm Spencer Raymond, KBOO News.
A California man agreed yesterday to plead guilty to a lesser charge rather than be retried on allegations that he lied to the FBI about his son's attendance at a terrorist training camp. The first trial of Omar Hayat, an ice cream vendor, ended last month in a mistrial after the jury deadlocked on two counts alleging that he lied to the FBI. His son, Hamid Hayat, was convicted the same day of supporting terrorism by attending an Al-Qaeda training camp in Pakistan in 2003 and lying to the FBI. The American military said yesterday that it was investigating the deaths of two Iraqi women who were apparently shot by coalition forces when their car approached an observation post in a city north of Baghdad and failed to stop. The military said in a statement that it had been told by the Iraqi police that the two women, passengers in the car, died later of gunshot wounds. The military statement said one of the women may have been pregnant. The woman's brother, who was wounded by the gunfire, confirmed that she was and said he'd been rushing her to the hospital in Samarra when the shooting occurred. An Iraqi police official said that Nabia Nisaif Jassim and her cousin Salia Mohammed Hassan were killed by American forces. The statement on the shooting comes after the American military launched an investigation into the deaths of Iraqi civilians in the city of Haditha. Survivors have accused American Marines of the unprovoked shootings of at least 24 men, women, and children in three homes in Haditha after a roadside bombing nearly killed a Marine. Like many Californians these days, Mehdi Shahbazi rails against the big oil cartels, price gouging, and the pain consumers feel at the pump. But Shahbazi is different. He's a gasoline dealer on a personal mission. Shahbazi is also going broke because of a long-running battle with Shell Oil. The pumps at his beloved gas station in Marina in California have been fenced off. The beer cooler in his mini-mart is empty because he can't pay suppliers. He's living currently in his minivan. To some, Shahbazi is on a chaotic campaign of self-destruction. And to others, the Iranian immigrant is a David-like character taking on the Goliath of big oil in a battle he believes is crucial for middle-class Americans facing record gas prices. 8 months ago, Shahbazi set up a wooden sign at his Marina Shell station. The sign read, "Consumers' pain is big oil's unearned profit. To oppose it, see cashier." Shell began moving against Shahbazi in early November after he erected a second anti-big oil sign. In December, Shell filed suit in U.S. District Court in San Jose, alleging that Shahbazi disparaged the company by putting up his signs. Shell seeking an injunction aimed at getting Shahbazi to leave the property. Shabazi's countersuit, claiming he didn't defame Shell because his flyer was referring to all oil companies. This from the San Jose Mercury News. Venezuela's President Hugo Chavez is opening today the 141st special meeting of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries. The over 200 delegates from 15 nations and 130 accredited representatives will analyze behind closed doors issues like fixed production quotas and measures in the process of fair value policies and support of the world energy demand. Nigeria's Minister of State for Petroleum Resources, Edmund Madubere Dakuri, presided over the forum and told journalists that the conference is due to examine all aspects of the oil market, including geopolitical problems, as well as other issues of interest. Venezuela Energy and Oil Minister Rafael Ramirez ratified the South American nation's position that the current crude oil prices are elevated due to factors such as geopolitical tension. This from Prensa Latina, the Latin American news service. The top U.S. general in Iraq today offered American commanders to conduct ethical training on battlefield conduct following reports that Marines massacred unarmed civilians in the town of Haditha. Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki said he asked a ministerial committee to hold talks with the U.S. military to set ground rules for raids and detentions. The order from the commander of multinational corps in Iraq said the training would emphasize professional military values and the importance of disciplined, professional conduct in combat, as well as Iraqi cultural expectations. The order was issued about a week after the U.S. Marine Commandant General Michael Hagi traveled to Iraq and cautioned troops on the danger of becoming, quote, indifferent to the loss of human life, unquote, following reports about the killings in Haditha. The president of Kyrgyzstan appeared today to withdraw a threat to expel U.S. troops if a payment dispute over basing rights in the ex-Soviet republic isn't resolved. President Kurmanbek Bakiyev had set a deadline of today for reaching agreement over the base payments, threatening to expel U.S. forces if no deal was reached. But his office said in a statement that the ongoing talks in the Kyrgyz capital were actively moving ahead and a decision had been reached to continue the talks and complete them in the nearest future. The bases are critical to U.S. geopolitical strategy in Central Asia. North Korea today has invited the chief U.S. nuclear envoy to visit the communist nation to prove Washington is committed to an agreement last year in which the North pledged to abandon its nuclear weapons program. Assistant Secretary of State Christopher Hill had previously expressed a desire to visit the North if it would help the six-nation arms negotiations, although he has said many factors would determine if such a trip could be made. No progress has been made on implementing the pact so far. The full arms talks haven't been held since November. The North is refusing to attend in anger over the U.S. blacklisting of a Macau-based bank and North Korea companies for alleged involvement in counterfeiting, money laundering, and weapons proliferation. Washington says the moves are unrelated to the nuclear issue. Other contacts have since been made between the sides, including through diplomats in New York, along with encounters in Beijing and Japan. The United States said yesterday it would join in face-to-face talks with Iran over its disputed nuclear program once Tehran puts its atomic activities on hold. This is a shift in tactics meant to offer the Iranians a last chance to avoid punishing sanctions. Iran dismissed the offer as a propaganda move. At the White House, President Bush said that the U.S. would take a leading role in solving the conflict and that it was important to do so diplomatically. Bush said, quote, our message to the Iranians is that, one, you won't have a weapon, and two, that you must verifiably suspend any programs, at which point we will come to the negotiating table to work out a way forward, unquote. Before leaving for meetings in Europe on Iran, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice said that while the U.S. was willing to join talks between European nations and Iran, it was also helping to prepare a package of sanctions that Tehran could face should it decline the new offer. A state of emergency was today declared in British-controlled Basra by the Iraqi Prime Minister. Nouri al-Maliki, who vowed an iron fist against gangs threatening security in the city, said he intended to stem rising violence between escalating Shia factions. The Prime Minister said security should come first, second and third. The state of emergency will last for 1 month. Basra has seen a dramatic increase in violence over the past year, and local police say almost 140 people have been killed this month. The previously relatively calm relationship between the local population and the 9,000 British troops stationed in the city has also been shattered. 9 British soldiers, including 2 members of the Queen's Dragoon Guards, who died in a roadside bombing on Sunday, have died since the start of May. In an address to local officials broadcast live on state television, Maliki appealed for unity and promised to crack down on sectarian violence. This, according to The Guardian. East Timor's Prime Minister Mari Alkatiri has told the BBC he will not resign despite being blamed for not ending the unrest which has paralyzed the capital, Dili. Alkatiri also disputed whether President Xanana Guzman, who announced emergency rule on Tuesday, was now in sole charge of the country's security. Dili was calmer yesterday, though some arson and fighting continued. 15 major aid donors to East Timor, including foreign governments, urged rival groups to stop their feuding. Alkatiri has been blamed by other members of the government for failing to stop the violence, which was triggered by his decision to sack hundreds of troops after they went on strike. Pro-Indonesian militias were accused of orchestrating the violence, which left more than 1,000 people dead. This, according to the BBC. This has been the KBOO Morning News for Thursday, June 1st, 2006. Chris Andre edited the news. KBOO's volunteer audio engineers edited the tape, and KBOO's intrepid reporters contributed to local stories. Kathleen Stevenson is the AM News and Public Affairs Director. Boone Revis is on the board right now. I'm Chris Andre. To volunteer in the AM newsroom, call Kathleen at 503-231-8032, extension 202. Reach us by email at amnews@kboo or drop by the station at 20 Southeast 8th. The KBOO website is www.kboo.fm. We clear the air at 90.7 FM in Portland, 100.7 FM in Corvallis on translator K264AA, 91.9 FM in Hood River on translator K220HR. Be sure to join us at 5 p.m. for the KBOO Evening News. Solid hour, solid news. Portland area weather today, mostly cloudy this morning. Showers developing in the afternoon, highs in the mid-60s. Tonight, rain turning to showers. Temperatures in the 50s. Coming up this morning on your community radio station that you make happen through your membership, your participation, and your listenership.